Bret Hart Radio is presented by Sharpshooter Funding in association with PodcastArena.com and Gao Media.
Are you a small business looking to get over, but you don't have all the funds you need? Well, there's a solution. Check out SharpshooterFunding.com. At Sharpshooter Funding, they know that they have a solution to fit your specific needs. Their team has the experience and knowledge to find you the best product for your specific situation. Whether you're a first-time customer or a repeat business partner, their team will fulfill your needs. Give them a ring at 416-238-0252. That's 416-238-0252. Or send an email to Dallas@sharpshooterfunding.com.
It's time to go down to the dungeon and visit the Hart Family Vault. The Hart Family Vault. This is Bret Hart Radio.
I want to welcome everybody for another edition of the Hart Family Vault on Bret Hart Radio.
Absolutely. Welcome, everybody. Yes, we're back here with another episode with WWE Hall of Famer Bret the Hitman Hart, his son Blade, and me, Nick Hausman from WrestleZone.com. And we have a lot to get into here today. But, of course, before we get to all of the stuff in the vault, we have to give a proper shout-out here to Sharpshooter Funding, the official sponsor of the Hart Family Vault here on Bret Hart Radio. And, Blade, I know you've got ties with Sharpshooter Funding. What is going on this week in the world of Sharpshooter Funding?
We're doing big things still. We're excited for the summer, but we actually just recently helped a golf academy out in Toronto. A guy, a friend of ours now, Jason in the Golfers Academy, we just sent them some custom balls this week with the logo on it, of course. But anyone interested in golfing or, you know, any kind of lessons, indoor, outdoor, or simulator lessons, make sure you check out thegolfersacademy.com.
All right, everybody, we are now inside of the Hart Family Vault. And typically in this segment each week, we like to take a look back at one of Bret's classic matches. But this week, instead of taking a look back at a match, we are going to take a look back at a man. Of course, last week, we lost to the world one of the greatest athletes, performers, people of all time, Muhammad Ali. And Bret, I know that you've written about the loss of Muhammad Ali recently. I just wanted you to kind of open up about your memories of the man and then what it means to you that he's no longer with us.
Well, you know, I think he still went too early, you know, but we all sense there was a certain frailness about him the last few years, and especially the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I understand he had a powerful heart right to the end, but the rest of his organs were sort of starting to go on him. But, you know, he was a very special man. He was the all-time greatest superstar I ever met in anything, period. He was a class act all the way. I mean, he made such a big impression on me as a kid growing up. In my household, boxing was kind of right alongside wrestling, and there was a lot of, you know, we had a lot of boxing personalities come through, you know, from Jersey Joe Walcott to Rocky Marciano to, you know, George Shivalo. All kinds of guys kind of came through and did different things related to refereeing or wrestler versus boxer kind of matches and stuff like that. And you know, it was always a respect that Ali had come through up here in Calgary back in I think just after he lost his fight against Frazier. And my dad had gone down to see him at the Stampede Corral here in town. And surprisingly, Muhammad Ali turned out to be a huge Gorgeous George fan, and him and my dad hit it off. My dad had a million stories about Gorgeous George, who was a good friend of his, and they really hit it off. You know, there's a picture that one of my brothers just sent me a few days ago of my dad with his arm over Ali's shoulder, and they're talking. And they definitely had for the short time they were together, had a very strong connection. And Ali definitely liked my dad, and my dad, I think, just was over the moon with all the – Ali was just such a nice guy. Whatever year you met him, you know, whether it was back in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s or whatever, he was such a strong force in anyone's life. But for me, my biggest memory about Ali was when I had suffered my stroke in 2002 in July. And it was probably almost a year later, or maybe even 8-9 months later, I was somehow got invited to a Miami Hurricanes final season dinner kind of thing that they were having. And Ali was the guest celebrity of the night. And I don't know how I ended up going, but I ended up going, and I was still pretty frail. I could barely walk. I could barely, you know, I was really weak on my left side. I had a bit of a droop in my left side of my face, and I had kind of this look on my face that if you hit me with a ball peen hammer, my eyes were wide open, and I looked kind of stunned. But I had the chance to meet Ali, and I remember I accepted the invitation, and I went down, and when I saw Ali, I was very anxious to kind of talk to him, but I found out quickly that he wasn't able to talk. And he I'm not sure if it was that he could whisper or he couldn't even whisper. Like he had trouble speaking, but he could listen. And I remember him and I told him what happened and that I'd suffered a stroke. And I'll never forget how he kind of gripped my hand and squeezed my fist and told me, with just his eyes, he was kind of like, don't worry, just you got to have to stay strong and you're going to just get, you have to fight through this and you'll get better. And it was just very powerful. I'll never forget it. And I remember it meant so much to me to meet him and to see him. And we took a few pictures. I remember we put our fists together. And I got a pretty good size fist. And his fist was at least an inch and a half wider than mine. His fist was like a 50-pound dumbbell. I mean, they were such big hands. When you look at Will Smith and you go, some people, like my dad, never bought Will Smith playing Ali in the movie. And it's because Ali was a big, big man. He was not a thin little actor. And Ali was just such an incredible guy. Even at the sports dinner that I was at, there was all kinds of sponsors and people that came up that were there, guests at the dinner that would come up and want a picture and take another picture and then one with the whole family and then sign this and sign that and sign this. And they were lined up and he just loved it. He signed everyone and took so much time with each person. And then I remember he had this kind of playful sense of humor. And that's when you could tell that he was all there. He was still the Ali that I always remembered, the kind of that funny messing around with Howard Cosell kind of personality. But he would always run up and jokingly pick up somebody's wife and pretend that he was carrying her off. And they would always laugh. And then he'd bring the wife back and set her back down. And, I just saw this sort of playfulness come out of him that, he maybe had Parkinson's, but he was still there. He was still living his life to the fullest. He was having a lot of fun. He enjoyed the people that were around him. He enjoyed being celebrated. He enjoyed when people took their time to talk to him. He knew that it meant something to them. He was so generous with his time and such a gentleman and such a class act. I'll never forget it. And I've met a lot of superstars or celebrities in my life that sometimes it's like I think it was Wade Barrett or somebody said, don't ever meet your heroes because they'll disappoint you. But in saying that, I can put Ali up with one of those ones that when you met him, he just shined even brighter after you met him. He was such an unbelievable personality and such a big-hearted guy. And I had nothing but respect for him all through his career. I remember him, in boxing George Shavallo, the Canadian heavyweight champion here, and going 15 rounds and basically pounding on George for most of the fight. And, he was a tough guy, and George Shavallo was a tough guy. And, I remember meeting George, or not George, I met Joe Frazier in WWE years ago when I was champion. And he was a big fan too. But you could tell that he had been hit too many times, and there was definitely concussion issues when I met him. And it was kind of sad when I saw Joe Frazier because it's kind of like, not like to be mean, but it was kind of like the lights were on and nobody was home. And Leon Spinks is another one that was kind of like that took too many shots to the head. And, you do meet a lot of old boxers in wrestling, and you meet a lot of old wrestlers. And what the difference between the two of them is that you know, the boxers come in and their brains are all sort of beat, you know, they're kind of punchy, and you meet the pro wrestlers and they all got they all got bad hips and replaced hips, and they got canes and stuff like that, but their brains are pretty clear, and they can tell you what gym they went at, and they can tell you who was a good worker, and they, you know, there's something different about that. But with Ali, just such a great human being, and not just from my personal experience, but just knowing him, what he did to for the world, and the stance that he took in about Vietnam, and I think when you look back on it now, you understand the courage that it took to make those decisions, and the pressure on him to cave in, and his strength in not ever doing that, and standing by his principle. And his message is so strong and so powerful for everyone around the world, and he's done so much to, for his religion and Islam, and the message he sends. And he's not a guy that you just have so much respect for him. It's just such a loss. I can't think of any sports hero that could ever fill the shoes that he's worn. And he's just such a standout character that, the world will never forget Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting, you talk about who could fill those shoes. I mean, greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. I did find it a little interesting that the same weekend that we lost Muhammad Ali was the same weekend that Brock Lesnar chose to get back into the octagon. And I don't know, Blade, again, I know that you're a big MMA guy. I mean, is there any other athlete here on the planet right now that has the same kind of draw, the same kind of allure, the same kind of showmanship and athletic prowess as a guy like Brock Lesnar right now? Is he arguably the, I hate to say filling the shoes of Muhammad Ali, but is he the closest thing to that right now at the moment?
I don't know if I'd use Brock, but I think you'd have to use someone like Floyd Mayweather, which I'd prefer Brock over Floyd anyways. But I think how gifted Ali was, and especially how, all the time, all the things going on with him back then, he stood for a lot more than just boxing. And that's, I don't think my generation has anyone like that yet. No one I would compare to Ali. Even Tyson won't compare himself to Ali. So I don't.
I think Ali stands head and shoulders above anybody I can think of, whether it's Michael Jordan or Wayne Gretzky.
I know you got a lot of your promo stuff from Ali, right? Like just the way he.
Well, I was always very, inspired, the way he talked and the way he carried himself, and he was very cocky. I initially, when I was in the early Hart Foundation days and trying to sort of, find a character try to emulate, was, I'm sure Ali came through in a lot of ways for me. I do recall even when I fought Shawn Michaels in an Iron Man match, and I remember watching in a few weeks before that match, and I can remember watching Ali fight Foreman over in that documentary about We Were Kings, which is a great documentary. Anybody wants to watch a good Ali documentary, that's one worth watching. But there was a part in there where he stood up and he knew this was the round that he was either going to go down or he was going to take out Foreman, and he had made his plan, and kind of this was the time had come for him to throw everything he had at Foreman and win the fight. And I can remember having a similar kind of feeling when I was fighting Sean, not so much, just not quite the same thing, but the same kind of feeling inside of, I knew I had to get to a certain time in the match to know that I could go like the last 15 minutes. Going an hour match when you haven't done one in a long time is really hard. Especially when you wrestle in Shawn Michaels, who was in phenomenal shape at the time. And I can remember there was a part where I knew, I think it was like 15 minutes left of the match, and Shawn had done some kind of dive out on the floor, or I had done some kind of dive on the floor, maybe. But I remember I was in the ring, and I was looking out at the crowd, and I looking out at Shawn Michaels, who was coming back in the ring. And it was a similar kind of feeling that I remember seeing in Ali when he was sizing up Foreman, that he knew that the rest of the job was going to take to finish the match. And I sort of remember thinking the same thing, like I got enough gas in the tank to to push the rest of this 15-minute match with Sean, and I'm not gonna have it. I'm not gonna run out of gas at the end of it. And like I say, there's sort of a kindred spirit that I remember watching Allie and how he carried himself, and he came out lots of times in my matches.
Well, Brett, of course, this week we took a look back at Muhammad Ali, but next week I would like to get back to taking a look at some of your classic wrestling matches here in the Hart Family Vault. Is there a particular match that comes to mind? I don't know, anything in the air that we've talked about, you know, in the last couple episodes that resonates with you? Is there a match that comes to mind you'd like to chat about next week?
Well, you know, I would love to see the match, you know, review the match with the 1-2-3 Kid. You know, I noticed that WWE's got a new book out called Greatest Matches of All Time. And, you know, it's a very interesting cross-section of different matches from different eras and the history of WWE. But, you know, I was quite surprised to find that match included in the Greatest Matches of All Time, because it was a great match. But, yeah, I think 1-2-3 Kid was a great talent in his own right, and I thought I brought out a really great match. I think he's always said it was the best match he ever had, but that would be a good one to review.
Awesome. Well, I will. I'll reach out to Sean and see if he actually wouldn't mind coming on and talking about it as well with you. I've been blessed to have spent some late nights with Sean Waltman on the road, and would love to hear you guys talking. So, what an interesting guy he is, and can't wait to look back at that match. But before we come back here at the end of the show with this week's 4 out of 10 and an Ask the Hitman question, right now we're going to be launching into part two of our interview with fellow WWE Hall of Famer Jake the Snake Roberts.
Subscribe to Bret Hart Radio on iTunes. Now back to the show. Here's Bret Hart.
What are your thoughts on working with Randy? Like, did you have great chemistry with Randy, Macho Man?
It was very easy with me with Randy because we got thrown on Saturday night's main event. The only one that Hogan was never on, what was his name? Guy from DC, Dick Ebersole, told Randy and I, he said, you know, he says, we've never done one of these things without Hogan being on the card, yada, yada, yada. We're going to put you guys out there, and if the ratings fall and go into commercial break and we come out the other side and the ratings are down, he goes, you guys will both be looking for a place to work next week. Well, I realized the guy was just bullshitting. But Randy, God almighty, you know him. He took it to heart, man. And so it's like, God, Stingman, we're going to come up with a lot more stuff. We're going to do this. I'm like, Randy, whoa, stop. What are you doing? And he was damn near going to change his character by just throwing so much stuff in there that didn't even fit him. And I said, Randy, dude, remember this, man. We got to do what got us here. You know, that's what we got to do. And, I don't know. I guess I had an old timer to teach me that, you know, the guy's going at you 100 miles an hour, just lean on him. Just keep leaning on him. And you lean on him for a few minutes, and they start running out of gas. And then all of a sudden, it was much easier to work with, you know. But the first few minutes could be kind of rough and tumble, you know. Randy was a great talent in the ring, but man,
he was a little bit high energy, high octane.
Yeah, Randy. Yeah, a little scary, yeah.
What was your experience working with Andre? Was that a lot of fun? Was Andre, you seemed to always have a lot of respect for, yeah, he loved the storyline with the snake, and that's what I remember. I don't remember the matches so much, but it seemed like you and him had a lot of fun out there. Like when you came back after the match, he had always had a big smile, and he loved the chemistry that you had, and that's not easy to do. Andre's not an easy guy to work with and have that kind of chemistry with, and
I just wonder
what your thoughts were on Andre.
Well, is getting into the business and having the opportunity just to drive him around. I was walking in the area of the gods, so to speak, with Andre. You know. And,
you know, did you ever work with him in Mid South?
No, I did not. You know, I never worked with him, and you know. Andre's a funny cat. I mean, the first night in the ring with me, He ate my ass alive, man. Did not give me anything in the match. It totally stunk the house up. It was in L.A. And one of the very few moments in my life I've ever stood up and confronted a guy that, hey, you know, you just totally blew that whole match, you know, by being a selfish big prick, you know. And I lost my control, and I cut the corner, and Lanza was there, and he grabbed me, and I shoved him back, and I pushed the door open on me. I'm like, fucking asshole, man. What the fuck are you doing? And I just, I don't know. I just talked, and he raised his hand up, and then he raised his head up and looked at me and goes, test. Now we're good. Now we're good. And I've watched him, you know, when he did the stuff to his Randy, you know, I mean, he totally guzzled Randy. I've seen Randy throw away about a half gallon of baby oil. And Randy Savage threw a bottle of baby oil around him. It was something of a moment in life. But I mean, he was so cheap. But, you know, with Randy got guzzled by the Giant, because Randy wouldn't fight him back. Andre wanted you to fight him, you know. He wanted to make that match believable, you know. So I was totally into that. And other than in Montreal, he did something really mean to me. He had been having a few cocktails before the matches. He did a lot of sometimes. And it was his birthday in Montreal. And, of course, he got up here. He wanted to play with all his French friends. And we got in the ring, and he knocked me on my butt, and next thing I know, he's sitting on me, and then I felt my shoulder vibrating. I'm like, what the hell is that? And then I got a whiff of it, and he was basically just sitting on me and farting. And Andre farted on me for about 40, 45 seconds. In some countries,
that's a sign of respect.
You know, I tell you what happened, man. When he got up off of me, man, I had like a wine stain on my arm. It looked like a birthmark.
That's a lovely story.
A great moment in my life, just to be in the ring and thought of to have
I can remember
respect of other people to think that I can
remember Andre standing on the top rope, and he'd stand on your stomach. Remember that? I can remember lumberjack match or somewhere. We out on the floor. I was out on the floor, and I remember him. I remember him doing it to you and doing it to Duggan pretty regularly.
He put both feet on your chest
and just stand on you for about 10 seconds, and you guys were turning
it will change
color.
Your life.
Oh, yeah. I had it done to me once, and I know that he's a big man, you know, to stand on your chest. You know, there's not much you can do about that.
No, nothing at all, man. I'm sitting here smiling from ear to ear, man. I just remember being out there and how good I felt.
Was there anybody that you ever missed working with, that somebody you would like to have worked with, or you never got the chance to, or you didn't work enough with?
I would have
with?
Liked to have worked with Orton. I would have liked to have had a single run with Brett. I'd always wanted to work with Brett. Just so
yeah,
I could
yeah,
get
it's
him
a
back
shame
to,
that we never
to
ever
ribs,
to,
he
to
used
my
to
knowledge,
to
ever
with Buddy Bickle.
You know, those were the good old days, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
we never worked one time.
For Brett's
I think
work,
one tag match.
To see him out there was, you know, back in the day when Dynamite was out there, and both those guys were both young, and we were all young back then, but those guys just went at it. It was a thing of beauty. But I always wanted to work with Brett. It's like I would like to work with Bob Orton Jr. I challenged Bray Wyatt to a stripper's pole match, but I've yet to get any confirmation on that. But, yeah, there's a couple other guys out there, you know, but enough's enough. You know, I'm too damn old for that shit anymore, man. I'm 61 now, and, you know, it's time I respect myself enough not to go out there and hurt myself and embarrass myself, too.
You were always a pro in the ring, you know. You know, I was talking earlier before you came on about wrestlers and injuries, and you were always a guy that was really careful in the ring. And, you know, I don't remember anybody. I know Steamboat got DDT'd one time and he got his head got whacked pretty good on the pavement.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't remember very many guys. You were always one of those kind of guys that you could just wing it. Like you just walk out there. You wouldn't even need to talk to finish. You could just go out there and have a five-star match based on just tying up and calling it from there. You were always a consummate professional, and your work rate was always tight and solid. And that's why were the star that you were, is because you worked a good, solid, serious. Your facial expressions, your promos, but just your work itself was always very serious, very respectable. And
Brett, you better shut up. I'll be wanting to get back in the ring again. Please don't do that to me.
Even the DDT, I mean, you came up with that on your own, and you invented that move and named it, and it was such a. I can remember around the time in Calgary that you sort of got that move kind of figured out and came up with it.
It was just halfway up there that I started thinking about making it a finishing hold. I mean, can you believe that? But you know, there's been so many holes and moves that we've all forgotten. And I don't know if you ever got the chance. I remember years ago you saying that you should definitely sit down and film your dad doing some of the things that he did. And you know, 'cause there was so much that he knew. I don't know if you ever got a chance to do that or not. But
well, they had a little
a whole lot of knowledge that was lost.
Yeah, you know, he really, you know, people talk about my dad a lot, and they always make reference to him stretching down in the basement and stuff like that. But the truth is, he really wanted to teach you. He really wanted to learn you how to be a tough guy, and how you could, if he could teach you these couple of moves, that you would, you could maybe, you know, they would come in handy sometime if you were in the ring and you needed to kind of stand it. He really wanted to teach you. He wasn't trying to pick on you.
Yeah, he wasn't a mean man by no means, no.
He was, you could wake him up at 4 a.m. and say, we got 2 Chippendale dancers down in the kitchen that want to be wrestlers, and, you know, he couldn't get his pants in the fast. He loved wrestling. He loved doing it for real, and he more than he did the pro wrestling.
Oh, man. Well, I mean,
there's always a mixture going on.
You guys talk about Stampede. I know you guys spent time together there. And one thing I for sure wanted to bring up as I was doing a little bit of research on you two is that did you guys at one point share a house together? Were you guys like roommates together?
Brett's home, yeah. Brett's home. And he had his guy boy there, friend, Bickle. And,
we had a pet gopher named Dan.
Yeah, there was a collection.
Continue to get a job.
That thing Vince did years ago, or called the Oddities or whatever. Well, the Oddities used to hang out by Brett's house, and there was always a different type of critter moseying around. You weren't quite sure what was wrong with him, but you knew something was definitely wrong with him.
It was a bachelor pad of the highest order. It was a good place. It was. You know, a lot of good memories, and you know, the fact is we were close to downtown, which made it kind of a good place to be, because you were, you know, as far as getting all the sort of checkpoints to leave to go out of town, you could drive just to, you know, 5 minutes away, and you're there, and you get out of town quick. It was a good location, and girls could find it easy, and it was a good house. A lot of they could hear the music down the street, you know.
Oh yeah, they heard a lot of things down the street, Brett. Come on. Well, listen, guys, I hate to do this to you, but we've got to go. We've got to go to this same station here. I would love to come back on the show, Brett, when I can and I have more time. But they threw this little thing I got to go do for the club tonight, so.
All right, well, we hope you knock him dead tonight and have you.
We're
show.
Going to, brother, and look forward to seeing you again. And, hey, folks, if you want to know the real deal, Brett can give it to you. Give it to you anytime. All right, take care, guys. Bye.
It's time for 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10.
I give it a 4 out of 10.
A nod to those who failed to excellently execute. 4 out of 10 on Bret Hart Radio.
I think the 4 out of 10 this week is, for me, it's, I got to figure it's got to go to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, just the failing to show up for the last 2 games against the Warriors in the finals. It's been disappointing for me. It's one of my first basketball experiences where I actually kind of started to watch basketball with the hockey, and anyway, I just think that he's done a lousy job of living up to the reputation of being supposedly one of the greatest basketball players in the league. I think he's Yeah, I know he's a one-man team, and he's kind of seems like he's just playing all by himself, and he's missing that, you know, he's missing that aggressive style that you would come to expect him for a championship series.
Yeah, and Blade, I know you had a 4 out of 10 for this week.
I do have a 4 out of 10 this week, and it's gonna go to my dad. Gets a 4 out of 10 for he kayfabed me and went to the San Jose Sharks game against my favorite team, Pittsburgh, on my own birthday.
I was flown in especially by the Sharks to neutralize this HBK thing, and and it worked. I was there. I was there in the building, giving that vibe, spreading it out throughout the building, and the Sharks came back with knowing that I was out in the crowd watching, that it would break my heart to see them lose, and they managed to tie it up and get the overtime win.
I will say,
you had to respect the fact that I couldn't tell Blade I was leaving because it was his birthday, and he would have trashed my whole house and had the biggest party of about 500 drunken bums all around my pool with their cigarette butts in my fire pit. And just the slightest, like, oh, hey, Blade, I just want to let you know I'm leaving for the weekend. Wasn't going to happen. Okay. Not going to happen.
Well, either way, my team took game four, so we'll finish it off in Pittsburgh, and we'll see who's laughing then.
It ain't over.
I want to give a real quick 10 out of 10, and I know you haven't seen it yet, Brett and Blade, but last night on Raw, Cesaro, get this, won a match. He beat Chris Jericho, made him tap out to the sharpshooter. Sharpshooter won a match.
Finally.
Wow. I wish I'd taped it now.
Yeah, well, you can YouTube it. It's readily available.
Right.
Check the net. WWE Network, $9.99. That's what I'm told.
Plug alert.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I got Vince in my ear right now. All right, with that, we're going to go to our last segment here for the Hart Family Vault. It's time to hashtag Ask the Hitman.
Got a question? It's time for Ask the Hitman. Ask the Hitman. Here he is, WWE Hall of Famer, 7-time world champion, 2-time King of the Ring, 5-time Slammy Award winner. It's Bret the Hitman Hart.
All right, and it is time to Ask the Hitman. All right, now, this is the part of the show where we ask Brett and Blade a couple questions here. This week we've got time for one big question, and I'm going to save it here. This one is for Call Me Dave G, at Call Me Dave G. He says, hey, Brett, when you lost the IC title to the Mountie, were you really sick of the flu, and what was the original plan for you at Royal Rumble 1992? Thank you.
No, I wasn't sick at all, but I had to pretend I was, and I had to wrestle like I supposedly had the flu and still give the fans a match. I remember it was actually hard to do, to pretend you were sick all the way through the match and then let Jock beat me. I can't remember what he beat me with, but he pinned me, and I think he pinned me. He had to pin me somewhere in there, and I had to pretend I was sick. I was sick when I found out that I didn't even get paid anything for the Royal Rumble. I was in the Royal Rumble right up until the like 2 days before the event. And then they had me supposedly get the flu on the night of, I think it was on a Monday or something like that. But I got the flu, and then they had the Rumble like a couple of days later. And, you know, I just was really disappointed. I was going to defend the title, I think, at the Rumble. I'm not sure who I was. I think I was supposed to fight Rougeau, I think, the Mountie at the Rumble. But having lost the title before that, ended up being Roddy took my spot because Roddy beat Jock. It was one of those kind of things where I wasn't sick for real, but I was very, at the time, felt really disillusioned with they took the belt off me, and you know, I know that they put it on Roddy and I end up getting it back, but I didn't really know that at the time. I just remember thinking, you know, and they talked about that you would work at the Roddy would win it at the Rumble, and that I would work with Roddy at SummerSlam. But from Rumble to SummerSlam is a long ways away, and I thought they'd probably change that and end up with somebody else, and that maybe somehow I had dropped the ball or had failed as a champion, and that it was kind of a polite way to switch things and go in a different direction. But I was always really honored when Roddy, you know, dropped the belt to me at SummerSlam. I was in the end, I was glad it all came through and had a happy ending for me. But at the time when I actually had to lose the match, I not only lost the title, but I lost out on a big payday at Royal Rumble. I don't think I got anything for the Royal Rumble. I just got taken off the card, and if I got anything, it wasn't much for the Royal Rumble, which was one of the big paydays of the year. So
that's what made you sick, not the actual Mountie.
That did make me sick. Made me blue in the gills.
Bret Hart Radio is a TJ DeSantis production. In association with Nick Houseman and Sharpshooter Funding, Bret Hart Radio. Its content is intended for private use only.